Look, let's be real. We need to take better care of our teeth, especially over the festive period. I know for me personally, I eat enough candy for 20 people. Well, that's where Quip comes in. The Quip electric toothbrush is loved by over 7 million people. It has a lightweight and sleek design for adults and children, time sonic vibrations with 30-second pulses, a multi-use travel cover, reusable handles, and more. Quip offers lots of other products to make sure your mouth is in tip-top shape, including floss, refillable sugar-free gum, refillable mouthwash, and more. If you go to getquip.com/morbidology right now, on top of their holiday savings, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free and up to 40% off bundles at getquip.com/morbidology. That is spelled getquip.com/morbidology. Quip, the good habits company. Is there anything more important than taking care of yourself? Everybody knows that when you're not feeling the best, you can't be your best. Well, that's where Sambucol comes in. Sambucol makes you feel better with powerful immune support, powered by nature's super fruit, the black elderberry. There's been a handful of mornings where I've woken up feeling rubbish, and Sambucol has given me that control back by supporting my immune system and making me feel better. It's not a chore to take Sambucol either because it tastes amazing, and my personal favourite is the syrups, but the gummies are wonderful as well. It's easy to incorporate Sambucol into your wellness routine. I personally take Sambucol each morning with my breakfast. Get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at sambucolusa.com. Use the promo code MORBID15 for 15% off. Welcome to Morbidology. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, Mysteries Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join Morbidology on Patreon for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, exclusive merch, ad-free and early release episodes, and much more. In March of 2019, a young woman vanished after leaving a bar in Columbia, South Carolina. She had ordered an Uber while standing outside the bar on her own. CCTV footage from outside the bar would capture the young woman entering a vehicle which had pulled up alongside her. By first appearances, it was the Uber that she had ordered. However, by the following morning, the young woman still hadn't returned home, and an investigation was launched. ...21-year-old Samantha Josephson was a native of Robbinsville Township in New Jersey, which is a Mercer County town of around 15,000 people. Samantha moved to the Hub High-Rise in downtown Columbia, where she was a senior political science major at the University of South Carolina. She was set to graduate in May of 2019, and she planned on attending law school at Drexel University in Philadelphia. Samantha had been a member of the Alpha Gamma Delta sorority, and while at the University of South Carolina, she had studied abroad in Barcelona and had visited Madrid and Paris. Samantha was described as a vibrant young woman with an infectious smile and a contagious laugh. When she wasn't studying, she worked as a server at Liberty Tap Room. As her boss said, she was sweet as can be. She was very fun-loving, well-liked, kind, very kind-hearted, always smiling. Everybody who knew Samantha said that she was the kind of person everybody loved to be around. While she lived away from her family during her studies, she was still very much a home bird and always spoke about how much she missed them. Her friends said that she had what they described as Samyisms, which were just quirks unique to her. For example, she would always enthusiastically belt out songs, even though she didn't know the words. A neighbour of the family back in Robbinsville Township, Barb Zimmel, said of Samantha, "She loved life and she took advantage of every moment that God gave her. If my family and I learned anything from Sammy, it was how to laugh often, love much and be yourself, no matter who was watching." On the night of the 29th of March 2019, Samantha went out with a group of her friends. At some point between 1:30 a.m. and 2 a.m, Samantha and her friends had been hanging out at the Bird Dog, located at 715 Harden Street in Five Points, which is an entertainment district in Columbia. Samantha somehow got separated from her group of friends and decided that she would return home alone. She ordered an Uber on her mobile phone. CCTV would capture Samantha outside, waiting for her Uber. A black Chevy Impala pulled up to the curb alongside Samantha at 2:09 a.m., and Samantha climbed in. Samantha never returned home that night, and all of her roommates' attempts to contact her were unfruitful. At 1:30 p.m. the following day, their concern for their friend had escalated to fear, and they contacted police to report her missing. The bouncer outside the Bird Dog would inform investigators that he had seen Samantha getting into the black Chevy Impala and it drove off with her in the back seat. They would check the CCTV footage to confirm this. It was known that Samantha had ordered an Uber, and presumably the car she had climbed into was her Uber ride. But then where was she? Could she have been dropped home and somehow vanished from outside her apartment? Could she have gotten the Uber to drop her off elsewhere? Investigators were looking into all angles, and they asked the public to keep an eye out and call them if they knew anything about Samantha's whereabouts. It wouldn't be long until there was an unexpected and extremely disturbing update in the case. At around 3:45 p.m, police in Clarendon County contacted Columbia Police to inform them that a woman's body had been found by hunters in a wooded area just off a dirt road off Knowlson and Black Bottom Road, around 70 miles away from where Samantha was seen climbing into the car. The body was Samantha. She had died from multiple sharp force injuries, and these injuries were dotted all across her body. She had numerous wounds to her head, neck, face, upper body, leg and foot. It was not immediately disclosed what type of weapon was used to inflict the injuries, but it was evident that it was a frenzied and extremely brutal attack. In fact, when Samantha's parents came to identify her body in the mortuary, they couldn't tell if it was her or not. She needed to be identified by DNA analysis. Investigators now had the task of identifying the black Chevy Impala, which had picked Samantha up. Around 12 hours after her body was found, a police officer spotted a black Chevy Impala, which matched the description of the one that was being searched for, just 2 blocks away from Five Points. The police officer pulled the car over, and while stopped, the driver of the car jumped out and fled on foot. The police officer followed suit and was able to apprehend the man. He was identified as 24-year-old Nathaniel David Rowland. He was arrested in connection with Samantha's murder. As it transpired, Nathaniel had been driving the black Chevy Impala that picked Samantha up. He wasn't an Uber driver at all. When he pulled up alongside Samantha, she erroneously believed that he was her Uber driver and climbed in. A press conference would reveal more details about the search of Nathaniel's car.
The Chevy Impala that was driven by the suspect had a large amount of liquid that we believed to be blood, and once they did a presumptive test, it in fact was confirmed to be blood. They executed a search warrant on that car. Additional amounts of dark colored liquid that was tested positive for blood was discovered in the trunk and in the passenger compartment. Collections of blood were obtained by the forensic crime scene agents and were submitted to SLED DNA lab for analysis compared to known standards of the victim. The analysis concluded that the blood in the suspect vehicle was that of the victim. Also, a cell phone belonging to the victim was found inside the passenger compartment of the suspect vehicle, and likewise located in the suspect vehicle was a container of liquid bleach, germicidal wipes, and window cleaner. Further investigation on the suspect vehicle determined that a child safety seat was in the back, and then the child safety locks were activated on the door that would not allow someone to the means of escape from the back of the suspect vehicle. The body in Clarendon County was also located in an area known to the defendant and near an area where the suspect recently resided, according to law enforcement sensitive databases and electronically accessed state maintained information.
An examination of his car found that the childproof locks were on the back seat doors, which would have prevented Samantha from being able to escape. A large amount of Samantha's blood was found inside the car, including in the trunk and in the passenger area. This indicated that Samantha had been attacked while in the car. Her mobile phone was also found in the passenger compartment alongside some bleach and wipes. The details of the case read like an absolute nightmare for women worldwide. When Nathaniel was pulled over to be arrested, he had attempted to flee.
All right, here's the deal, man. I pulled your car over because it matches the suspect. Get your hand in your pocket. What are you, crazy? Get over here. Hey, get over here! Come on, run! Hey, I'm going to release the dog! I can't. I was just going to see if he'll stop. Bravo, Mike, wearing a gray sweatpants, gray sweatshirt.
The case had unfolded so quickly with Samantha's body and a suspect being identified within just 24 hours. In announcing Samantha's murder and arrest, Columbia Police Chief Skip Holbrook said, "Our hearts are broken. There is nothing harder than to stand before a family and explain how their loved one was murdered." Samantha's family all flew to Columbia, and her father, Seymour Josephson, would confirm her death on his Facebook account. He posted, "It is with tremendous sadness and of a broken heart that I post this. I will miss and love my baby girl for the rest of my life. Samantha is no longer with us, but she will not be forgotten. It is extremely hard to write this and post it, but I love her with all my heart. I could continue to write about her, but it kills me. I sit here and cry while looking at the picture and write this." Tributes for Samantha would come rolling in, including one from South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster, who said that he and his wife Peggy were devastated and crushed by the grim news. Back in Robbinsville Township, Mayor Dave Fried and B.A. Joy Tozzi would state that their thoughts, prayers, and boundless grief and endless support were with Samantha's family, including her parents. A GoFundMe page would also be set up to help raise money for Samantha's funeral and memorial costs, as well as for other expenses. In the first 3 hours, it had reached over $9,000. The area where Samantha's body was found was quite out of the way, surrounded in thick trees and with few people living nearby. One person who had lived in the area, however, was Nathaniel. According to Chief Holbrook, somebody would need to have known that specific spot to go there and dispose of a body. Nathaniel had grown up in New Zion, near where Samantha's body was found, and had attended East Clarendon High School. He was enrolled at South Carolina State University in 2017, but he had since dropped out. He had a few minor run-ins with the law, including charges for a seatbelt violation, a forgery charge, and a charge of transporting alcohol without a seal. Nathaniel would be charged with murder and kidnapping. He waived his right to appear in court, which was his legal right. During the hearing, the judge allowed Samantha's mother, Marcy, to speak. She stated, "There are no words to describe the immense pain his actions have caused our family and friends. He's taken away a piece of our soul, our life. Shame on him. We'd like him to be here, to see his evil face. I cannot fathom how somebody could randomly select a person, a beautiful girl, and steal her life away. His actions were senseless, vile, and unacceptable." It sickens us to think that his face was the last thing my baby girl saw on Earth. Does he even know her name? Marcy went on to speak about her daughter, saying that she was known by her family as Sweet Pea. She described Samantha as bubbly, loving, kind and full of life. A vigil would be held for Samantha on the grass behind USC's Strom Thurmond Wellness and Fitness Center before the month of March came to a close. During the vigil, her father Seymour said that he planned on making it his mission in life to prevent what happened to his daughter happening to anybody else. Before the crowd, he spoke about what happened to Samantha, how she earnestly believed that she was getting into her Uber.
I can't tell you how painful this is. Samantha was by herself. She had absolutely no chance. None. The door was locked. The child safety lock was on. She had absolutely no chance in this. If there's somebody else in the car, there's actually a chance.
He said he planned on contacting Uber and Lyft, which is another ride-sharing app, and would be asking them what they could do to improve the safety of their passengers. Samantha's boyfriend, Greg Corbishley, was there as well, and he spoke about the last time he spoke to Samantha, which was via FaceTime.
I was on the phone tracking her through all this just to make sure she got home safely, and immediately knew that there was something that was wrong. Unfortunately, I was 2.5 hours away. I'd do anything to go back.
He said that during the last time they spoke, Samantha had told him, I was her person and she loved me and that she could truly be herself around me. I see that even in the short time that she was here, how many people she positively impacted with her energy. And as my friend said, energy doesn't die. It stays with you. That positive energy is going to help me go on living the rest of my life. What happened to Samantha was absolutely terrifying and could have happened to anybody. Ride-sharing apps such as Uber and Lyft are extremely popular, especially when it comes to having a drink with your friends, which means that you cannot drive home. Many people would share their ideas on how to keep safe in such situations, such as checking the make, model and license plate of the ride when it arrives, looking at the driver and comparing them to the driver's photo in the app, and asking them to confirm what your name is. After Samantha's murder, safety really became a nationwide focal point, and even state lawmakers in South Carolina started to debate on how to make ride-sharing safer. One lawmaker announced that they were planning on filing a bill that would make rideshare drivers have illuminated displays as opposed to just having stickers. Representative Seth Rose announced the bill, which was referred to as the Samantha L. Josephson Ride-Sharing Safety Act. Under the new bill, ride-sharing vehicles in the state would be required to display signs that were readable during the day and at a distance of 50 feet. These signs must also be illuminated and patently visible so that they could be seen in the darkness. The law was fast-tracked after its introduction, which meant that it would be bypassing the committee process. As can be the case far too often when women are killed, many across social media took to blaming Samantha for her own murder, stating that if she hadn't have drank that night, then she wouldn't have got into Nathaniel's car. The only person responsible for her murder that night was the person who committed it. A lot of people feel more comfortable thinking that such a crime couldn't happen to them or somebody that they love and wouldn't happen to them if they were just more careful than the victim. But this in itself is not only a disgusting mentality to have, but also a dangerous one. Women do not need to do anything to stop themselves from getting murdered. Meanwhile, Nathaniel's parents would have an interview with WACH News, during which they stated that they believed their son was innocent. Henry and Loretta Rowland said, "My heart goes out to the family. I feel so bad, but my son didn't do it." They said that on the night that Samantha was killed, Nathaniel had been at a party, and as far as they were aware, he had passed out. Henry stated, "When he finally woke up, he went to search for his keys. They weren't in his pocket, so he stepped outside to see if his car was there. His car was out there. He opened the door and the keys were in the car. There was blood everywhere. That's as far as we know right now." From this statement, it was evident that Nathaniel had claimed to his parents that somebody else was driving his car that night. While they didn't believe that he was guilty, his father Henry did state that if he were, then he needed to pay the consequences. Nathaniel's parents weren't the only ones to come to his defence. There were a handful of people who said they couldn't reconcile the Nathaniel they knew with the man who had been charged with such a heinous crime. One of those people was Justin Walters, who had coached Nathaniel in amateur athletic union basketball. He stated to the Daily American, "That doesn't sound like the person we know and love." He said that Nathaniel was a great kid from a very involved family who always helped with summer fundraising. Nathaniel's cousin, Dominique Rhodes, said that he had never displayed any actions which would indicate he was capable of the crimes of which he had now been charged. Samantha's funeral was held on the 3rd of April at Congregation Beth Chaim, a village road in West Windsor, New Jersey, which is where Samantha had her bar mitzvah as a child. Hundreds of mourners packed into the synagogue to pay their final respects to Samantha. Her father Seymour provided a heartfelt eulogy, which read in part, "I will always love you, think about you, worry about you, and I will always have your voice inside my head saying, Dad." He told the mourners that his daughter's name must never be forgotten, and lamented that her bright future had been cut tragically short. Her sister Sydney stated, "There's a hole in my life, and I will live like this from now on." Following the service, Samantha was buried at Perrinville Jewish Cemetery. That night, a candlelight vigil would be held in Robbinsville. People gathered around Samantha's family as they remembered her as a sweet and caring girl who loved her family and her friends. Her father, Seymour, described her as kooky and laughable, as well as one of the best kids you would ever meet in your entire life. He also thanked the Columbia police officers who had chased and arrested Nathaniel. The Jewish community at the University of South Carolina would honour Samantha the following day with a traditional Shabbat candle ceremony. Around 30 people attended the ceremony, which included a traditional dinner, symbolic giving of money to charity, and a reading of Psalm 23. Rabbi Shirley Epstein said, "It's particularly appropriate to honour her because the candle has always represented the soul. Tonight our candles will burn with an added significance, with an added brightness to drive away some of that darkness that took Sammy away." On the same day as Samantha's funeral was held, Uber released a statement saying that they would be partnering with the University of South Carolina to help raise awareness on how to avoid fake rideshare drivers. It read, "Since 2017, we've been working with local law enforcement to educate the public about how to avoid fake rideshare drivers. Everyone at Uber is devastated to hear about the unspeakable crime, and our hearts are with Samantha Josephson's family and loved ones. We spoke with the University of South Carolina president and will be partnering with the university to raise awareness on college campuses nationwide about this incredibly important issue." The University of South Carolina would announce in early April that they were going to be awarding Samantha with a posthumous degree that her parents would be collecting during the graduation ceremony. Meanwhile, the Samantha L. Josephson Ride-Sharing Safety Act passed the South Carolina House with a vote of 99-1. Uber had actually attempted to put the brakes on the bill and had executives fly into South Carolina to try and prevent it from being passed. Uber didn't want the state to require their drivers to use the logos on their vehicles. They had argued that it could create a false sense of security for riders, especially because people could just buy fake ones online. The bill became known as the Passenger Protection Act. Samantha's parents, Seymour and Marcy, would appear on Good Morning America in the middle of April to make a national plea for changes to ride-sharing laws. They said that while illuminated signs were a step in the right direction, there was still so much more that could be done to enhance safety. Seymour stated that 19 states do not require drivers to have a front license plate, and while he didn't think it should be mandatory for all vehicles, he said he believed it should be mandatory for rideshare drivers. They also said that they thought that rideshare drivers should have a barcode on their windows. Shortly thereafter, the ride-sharing app Lyft announced that they would be expanding their criminal background checks on their drivers, and these would be checked daily. They announced that they would also be enhancing their identity verification process to make sure that riders know who their drivers were before getting into the vehicle. Columbia Mayor Steve Benjamin would also call on stronger regulations on ride-sharing companies within the city. He proposed regulations which included the inspection of all ride-sharing vehicles, designated pickup points, and better lighting at pickup points. He further proposed that nobody on bond for domestic violence or any other crime, with a maximum penalty of more than a year in prison, should not be allowed to work for any ride-sharing company. Furthermore, his proposal included the stipulation that no ride-sharing vehicle should be allowed to use child safety locks unless a child is in the car. Uber would follow suit and implement new features, including a push notification that made sure their riders knew the specifics before their ride arrived. A push notification would also remind riders of safety tips they needed to take before getting into a vehicle. It also added an in-app banner, which included a clear message displaying the rider's name, license plate number, and make, model, and exterior vehicle colour. Gaps in the diet should never be ignored. For example, did you know that 97% of women aged 19 to 50 aren't getting enough vitamin D from their diet, and 95% aren't getting their recommended daily intake of key omega-3? Well, that's where Ritual comes in. Ritual's essential for women's 18-plus multivitamin was formulated by extensive research to help fill in nutrient gaps in the diet of women aged 18-plus. A clinical study has shown that Ritual's essentials for women 18-plus increased vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in 12 weeks. What I love about Ritual's essential for women 18-plus is that there's omega, but it's suitable for vegetarians and vegans. It's essentially a one-stop-shop multivitamin, which is far easier than taking multiple tablets for different vitamins each day. I also love that the multivitamins actually smell nice, making it that bit easier to take them each morning. Right now, Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/morbidology. That is ritual.com/morbidology, and turn health habits into a ritual. That's 10% off at ritual.com/morbidology. Is there something interfering with your happiness, or are you apprehensive about reaching out for help? BetterHelp is here to help you, and they're today's sponsor of Morbidology. BetterHelp is not self-help. It's professional counseling available to you online or over the phone. BetterHelp is more affordable and accessible than traditional offline counseling, and they offer financial aid. Sadly, sometimes traditional offline counseling is not locally available for everybody, but BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. They have licensed professional counselors specializing in a broad variety of areas, including depression, sleeping, self-esteem, grief, and much more. Everything you share with your counselor is confidential and they are matched to your specific needs. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/morbidology. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/morbidology. Meanwhile, Marcy and Seymour would start a website called whatsmyname.org, and they asked for people to do 4 things that spell out the acronym SAMI. Those are stop, plan ahead, ask your driver what's my name, match the vehicle to the one displayed on the app, inform, share details of your trip with a friend. A number of bars in the Five Points area would announce around the same time that they too wanted to make sure their patrons were safe at night, and many pledged that going forward, their bouncers would walk customers to their rides for the first hour after bars close. Jay Jones, who was the head bouncer at Moosehead Salon, said, "We want to make sure customers are safe while they're here and make sure they're safe when they leave. We're not just leaving you out on the sidewalk." Towards the end of April, a Senate subcommittee voted to scrap the requirements for an illuminated sign in the new bill, and instead asked that it be required for drivers to display their license plate numbers on the front of their vehicle. This change had been requested by Uber, and they said that it would be nearly impossible for a fake driver to duplicate it, unlike an illuminated sign. A spokesperson for Uber said, "If we train customers to look for outside verification on the safety of a ride, we are playing right into the hands of criminals. We need to be training them to look at their app and verify the license plate and the information we provide." Towards the end of April, a Senate subcommittee voted to scrap the requirement for an illuminated sign in the new bill, and instead asked that it be required for drivers to display their license plate numbers on the front of their vehicles. A new bill was then approved by a House subcommittee, which made it a misdemeanor crime to impersonate a rideshare driver. Anybody who would be convicted of such a crime would face up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. While Nathaniel had already been charged with the murder of Samantha, he would further be charged with possession of a weapon during the commission of a violent crime. A grand jury had found that he did possess or visibly display a knife during the commission or attempted commission of a violent crime on or around the 29th of March. The graduation ceremony at the University of South Carolina was held on the 10th of May. There was an empty seat where Samantha should have been sitting. It was draped with a cap and gown. President Harris Pastiles led the students in a chant of "What's My Name?" as homage to Samantha. He also awarded her parents with a posthumous degree in political science.
Now I'd like to take a moment to recognize and honor the life and the legacy of Samantha Josephson, our cherished 21-year-old senior political science major whose life was tragically taken from us. Samantha's family is here with us today, and she'll receive her college degree posthumously directly after this ceremony. Fellow Gamecocks, class of 2019, we must ensure what happened to Samantha never happens again. Asking "What's my name?" before getting in a rideshare vehicle will save lives.
The following week, the Passenger Protection Act was passed into law. Under this new law, rideshare drivers needed to display their license plate information at the front of their vehicles so that it could clearly be seen when they pull up. The bill, called Sammy's Law, would follow suit, which meant that ride-sharing services in New Jersey must identify their vehicles with reflected or illuminated signs in the front and back, and drivers would be required to carry barcode ID cards. Samantha's family would call the passage of the laws a bittersweet moment, with her father stating, "Things have started to change. New Jersey has become the leader in the ride-sharing industry for safety. We are talking about technology companies. Why hasn't this been done? The QR code, the signage. If this was already in place, I would not be standing here. Samantha would. Samantha would be alive." Seymour would state that he was pleased that three states, including New Jersey, North Carolina, and South Carolina, had passed these laws, but he wanted more to be done. He stated, "Call me and let's talk. Let's take the next step. What they have done is great. But why not implement more technology?" Just a few months after the law was passed, Uber would implement a new safety feature across a number of cities in the United States. This feature enabled a rider to call 911 on the app simply by swiping. This would digitally transmit information about a rider's location, as well as the make and license plate number of the vehicle they were in. Lyft was also rolling out similar emergency assistance buttons. Then in early 2020, Uber implemented a new safety feature. Users have the option to turn on a feature that sends rides a PIN number that they need to confirm with the driver before entering the car. The murder trial would be pushed back due to COVID, and in 2021, it was announced that Nathaniel would be standing trial in July of that year. As jury selection was underway, Nathaniel unexpectedly requested a new defense lawyer. Judge Clifton Newman, opposed to the sudden change so late in the case. Later that same afternoon, Nathaniel said he would keep his defence lawyer. The opening arguments commenced on the 19th of July.
March 28th, 2019 was supposed to be a celebration. Samantha Josephson and friends for gathering together as a celebration of life. They hadn't seen one another in a while, and they're getting together because, quite frankly, they were all about to graduate. They're getting together to relive a few of those kind and fun moments of college, and a chance to reflect a little bit on those times, and also to think a little bit about what the future was to hold. They were looking towards toasting and celebrating the fact that they were graduating and moving to a new phase of their life. They had their eyes firmly fixed on their futures and their eyes firmly fixed on their love for one another. But what they didn't realize, what they could never have realized, is that the defendant, Nathaniel David Roland, had his eyes firmly fixed on Samantha Josephson.
Prosecutor Byron Gibson would state that Samantha had mistaken Nathaniel's car for her Uber before he trapped her in the car with the child locks. He said that Nathaniel stabbed Samantha to death and then dumped her body near his family home. He said that CCTV footage from the entertainment district where Samantha was taken from had captured Nathaniel circling the area multiple times before pulling up alongside Samantha. He went on to state that investigators tracking both Samantha's phone and Nathaniel's phone found that they were travelling together through parts of Colombia for around 20 minutes before Samantha's phone turned off. Nathaniel's phone continued to ping to Tars in New Zion, which was where he had grown up and where Samantha's body was found. He said there would be a witness who found Nathaniel's bloody clothing in a dumpster, and another who saw him cleaning a knife, presumably the murder weapon. He revealed the full extent of Samantha's injuries, stating that there were more than 100 stab wounds, cuts, and abrasions all across her body. During the defence's opening statements, defence attorney Alicia Good said that Samantha must have fought back. She said that investigators had collected a plethora of evidence in the days after the crime, including on Samantha's body and in Nathaniel's car. However, she said that none of the DNA collected matched Nathaniel.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to hear this number again, and that is zero. That's the amount of DNA on Samantha Josephson's body that matches Nathaniel Roland. Zero. It's not on her clothing. It's not under her ripped and torn fingernails. It's not on her ankles.
The first witness for the prosecution would be Samantha's boyfriend, Greg.
And as you were getting to know each other during those first couple of years and even beyond, what kinds of things did you do together?
We did everything together, I would say. We kept in contact more than the average couple. You know, even when we were living 5 minutes apart, FaceTiming each other, checking in, go get food. We'd go to the Five Points area together. We'd go to football games. We did pretty much everything together.
Right. And you said at some point things got a bit more serious between you. Is that right?
Yeah, spring of 2017, right before the summer.
And ultimately, you guys were actually in a relationship.
Yes, sir.
Cared for each other a great deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Loved one another.
Yeah.
He said that he and Samantha were essentially joined at the hip and were always together, whether that be in person or on the phone. We pretty much did everything together, he said. He spoke about the night in question and said that he and Samantha had been in contact throughout the night, and then they spoke on the phone shortly after she ordered an Uber.
We got off the phone. Me and her had our locations shared with each other through the Find My Friends app. And I tracked it just to make sure she got home safe, as I always did.
And so when you began tracking her phone, as she departs the bird dog, which direction was it headed?
Where that yellow pin is with the bird dog, it went south of that.
Okay, so this way?
Yeah, the complete opposite direction of where you would go if you were going towards the hub.
Okay. And when you saw that she was going in a different direction, what did you do?
I called her. First texted her. At first, I really didn't think anything of it. I thought maybe they're going back to Edgar's or someone's house after. but there was no response and no answer to the call.
After receiving no response from Samantha, he said that for the first time in their relationship, Samantha stopped sharing her location at 2:40 a.m. He said he went to bed thinking that Samantha had left her phone in the Uber. He spoke about the moment he learned Samantha had been killed.
What happened after you completed your interview with them?
They took me back down to, I guess, what the waiting room is, or the main entrance room. I was surprised to see her roommates there. I was unaware that they were there. We waited for about 10, 15 minutes, and then they led us into what I would call a conference room, and there were Mr. and Mrs. Josephson sitting there, looking distraught. First thing that went through my head was, I hope their look is just because they haven't found her yet. As you said, or as I confirmed, they hadn't told me what had actually happened yet. They broke the news to us right there. And just after that, you know, I just broke down, felt my legs collapse from under me, and, you know, just kind of black, you know, almost black out, just with disbelief.
Samantha's body had been found by turkey hunters. Ander Lee, who was one of those turkey hunters, would testify about the moment he came across the tragic scene.
Well, I was walking down. I didn't observe anything. It was on my way back. So when I guess I was just looking through the woods, and something caught my eye to the left.
Over in this area?
Yes, sir.
All right.
And I saw something. I wasn't sure what it was. So I stopped, and I kept looking. And then I guess the more I looked at it, the more it started looking like a body. And that's when I called Ryan down there, and he walked down the fire break to me. And he was like, you know, we were kind of both in disbelief. Yeah, I guess we didn't expect to see something like that, you know, turkey hunting especially, you know, out in the middle of nowhere like that. And so I took a couple steps to get a better viewpoint because there was trees and stuff. And that's when we decided we need to call somebody.
How many free trial subscriptions end up costing you hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, long after you forget to cancel them? It's time to fight back against scammy subscriptions with Truebill. Truebill is an amazing new app to help you identify and stop paying for unwanted subscriptions. On average, people save $750 with Truebill. Companies often make it hard to cancel subscriptions, and Truebill makes it super easy. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel any unwanted subscriptions in just one tap. Truebill Concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions, so you don't have to. For me personally, I got a Prime subscription for the holidays and completely forgot to cancel it, but Truebill had me covered. They truly do save you hassle and money, and I cannot recommend it enough. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start cancelling today at truebill.com/morbidology. Go right now to truebill.com/morbidology. It could save you thousands of dollars a year. The Uber driver who was supposed to pick Samantha up that night would tell the courtroom that he couldn't find her, so he had to cancel the ride. A former girlfriend of Nathaniel would testify next. Maria Howard said that the night Samantha was abducted, Nathaniel had been at her home. She said that when she went to sleep at 1:30 a.m, Nathaniel was still there and still awake. But when she woke up in the middle of the night, he was gone. She said she attempted to ring Nathaniel, but she received no reply. She said that the following morning she had seen blood in the back seat of Nathaniel's car, and when she queried it, he didn't reply to her.
And what, if anything, did you notice about the car at that point?
That it was like dry blood in the car.
Where in the car?
On the dashboard and beside the seats.
When you say the dashboard, what are you talking about?
Where the airbags are.
Like the console? Yes,
ma'am.
The console? Okay. And where else did you see blood?
In the back seat.
In the back seat. Was anything else in the back seat?
It was a sheet over the back seat and the back of the driver's seat.
And how do you mean there was a sheet?
It was kind of like covering but it wasn't all the way covering the seat.
Okay, was it like draped on the seat so you could see the outline of the seat, or was it above the seat, or tell describe?
Just like threw over the seat where you can't see.
Okay. Could you see anything in the back seat besides the sheet?
Blood.
Where did you see blood then?
On the seat.
On the seat. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not the part that was covered, or was it under the, could you see through the sheet?
Like the part of the seat that wasn't covered, you could see blood.
What did you do when you saw the blood?
I asked him, why is it blood in the car? Did you hit a dog?
And what did he say?
Mind my business.
This had happened just the day after Samantha vanished. Maria testified that Nathaniel was supposed to pick her up for work, but was late, and when she asked him where her McDonald's hat was, he cryptically replied that it was in the country and that it had blood on it. When she asked him what he meant, he replied, "Mind your own business." Maria said to the courtroom that she had seen Nathaniel cleaning the car with bleach, as well as cleaning a sharp, knife-like object shortly before he was arrested. She was asked why she didn't think to call police, and she responded, "Because I was scared for my life. I didn't know what was going to happen." The suspected murder weapon would be displayed to the jury. It was a bladed multi-tool which resembled a double-handed knife. It also had a pair of pliers with Swiss Army-like tools. From the handle to the tip of the blade was estimated to be around 6 to 7 inches long. Dr. Thomas Beaver would take the jury through the wounds that had been inflicted on Samantha. He testified that there were roughly 120 stab wounds to her body, but he didn't have an exact number because there were just too many.
When she presented you, what was it that you saw that grasped your immediate attention?
There were two things first. The first thing was that she had an extensive amount of insect activity on the surface of the body. And the second thing, pretty much at the same time, was that she had many stab wounds over the surfaces of the body.
Now, I'd like to first begin by showing you a series of pictures. And you talked about just kind of the methodology you use. As you performed this autopsy, did you, because of the number of stab wounds, as you mentioned, did you do them in groupings? Did you try to group them differently than you normally would?
Yes, sir. Once the number gets up around 100, it really makes the autopsy report and any description very bulky. So I try to group them where they're closely together and related. So. Yes, I'll group them into groups of 5 or 6 or 8 in a certain area.
And you mentioned the number 100. Were you able to count the number of stab wounds as you observed Ms. Josephson's body?
Yes, it's over 100. I think somewhere around 120. But gets to a point where it doesn't really add much to the report.
He said that there was so little blood left in Samantha's body that he struggled to get enough blood for a routine testing. There were around 1.3 tablespoons of blood, when a body typically has 4 liters. He would identify the weapon presented in court as the murder weapon, stating that it was a unique weapon. He said, "This knife has 2 blades, and they're relatively parallel. They are bent at the tip, and they are size appropriate for the wounds I saw. This is the murder weapon." Detective Dahlia Jazik then showed clothing with blood on them that had been found in the garbage at Maria's home, as well as vinyl gloves, a towel, paper towels and cleaning wipes. The weapon had also been found in the garbage. Inside the home, they had found a pair of child-sized Adidas shoes with bloodstains on the sole, a pillowcase with suspected blood, and a black glove that contained suspected hair and blood samples. There would be a text message from Maria to Nathaniel, where she said her daughter had got blood on her shoe from being inside his car. Under cross-examination by the defence, Detective Jazik acknowledged that no scratches were found on Nathaniel's arms or face when she photographed him following his arrest. Lieutenant Todd Schenk would take the jury through the crime scene where Samantha's body was found. He said that she had broken fingernails, and had gathered any material that could have been underneath her fingernails, as well as collected a DNA swab, fingerprints, and hair samples from her body. He said Samantha could have been dragged to the spot where she was found because of markings on her arms, as well as the fact her clothing was pulled up over her head. There was no blood at the scene where Samantha was found, which led them to believe that she was murdered inside the car. Samantha's t-shirt was displayed to the courtroom, and it showed the sheer brutality of her murder. It was so saturated in blood that the colour couldn't even be determined. She had clearly fought for her life. There were footprints on Nathaniel's car window, and there was a stab wound to the bottom of her foot, indicating that Samantha had literally been kicking for her life. A latent print analyst would testify that the footprints were determined to have come from Samantha. He then testified about Nathaniel's car, stating that while processing the car, he found that the child lock had been engaged and there was a child booster seat in the back. Detective Delilah Searinson would also talk about the car, stating that they had found a pair of gloves and a hat, a flip-flop sandal, duct tape and blood on the floorboards, rear console and front headrest. There was testimony from handwriting expert Jack Jamieson, who informed the courtroom of an envelope found in Nathaniel's car. Somebody had written a list on it.
Next line is duct tape, tape whole body. Next line is gloves. Next line is all black. Next line is flip phone. Next line is gasoline. Next line is matches. And then there's a crossed out line below the matches line.
As far as the results go, what did you determine?
My determination was that it's probable that the writer of the known documents also wrote the question document. Probable means a high degree of likelihood that they were written all by the same writer, both question and known.
He compared this handwriting to samples of Nathaniel's handwriting and found that it was most likely the same person who had written both. O'Shamar Williams, who owned Cellular City Cell Phone Repair, would tell the courtroom that on the 29th of March, somebody he identified as Nathaniel came in and tried to sell an iPhone 7. He said that he was driving a dark Impala, and he noticed that the background of the phone was a white woman on holiday. CCTV footage from inside the shop would be presented. Cell phone data would be presented as well, which showed that Nathaniel's phone and Samantha's phone pinged to the same towers in Five Points and Rosewood before Samantha's phone was turned off. It was then turned on again that morning. By this point, Samantha was dead, but her cell phone pinged to downtown Columbia before heading to Monticello Road. Nathaniel's phone was also shown to be in Sumter the following morning, which is where CCTV footage had captured a man unsuccessfully attempting to withdraw money from Samantha's bank account at an ATM. From here, his phone travelled to Monticello Road, which is where the shop was located, where Nathaniel had allegedly tried to sell Samantha's phone. While the defence were sticking to their guns that DNA couldn't link Nathaniel to the murder, a forensic scientist would testify that DNA found underneath his fingernails was Samantha's. Ryan DeWayne said that Samantha's DNA was also found on a sock and a bandana belonging to Nathaniel, as well as on the suspected murder weapon. There was also weak support that Nathaniel's DNA was found on the suspected murder weapon as well. Both his DNA and her DNA were found on gloves that were found in the trash at Maria's home. The defence would call on no witnesses, but they would ask for the case to be thrown out because they claimed it was purely circumstantial. Judge Clifton Newman rejected the case, stating that there was an avalanche of direct and circumstantial evidence. During closing arguments, Prosecutor Goldberg ran through all of the evidence against Nathaniel. He said Samantha was right there for the taking. The defendant did the taking. He took her from Five Points. He took her life, and he took the time to try and erase all of the evidence. To try and erase her. He implored the jury to use their common sense, take the evidence in the case and return with a verdict of guilty. Defence Tracy Pinnock, however, once again tried to state that DNA didn't prove that Nathaniel was guilty of murder. She said, Nathaniel Rowland did not have a mark on him, not a cut or a bruise. They created a narrative and he's the villain in their narrative. The jury would be sent away to deliberate, and it took them a little more than 1 hour to reach a verdict.
Indictment number 2019 GS-42450, the state of South Carolina versus Nathaniel David Rowland. It's an indictment for murder. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty. On four persons, jury, this is signed by a four person jury on the 3rd, July 27, 2021.
They find Nathaniel Rowland guilty of the murder of Samantha Josephson. The sentencing phase would immediately follow, and Samantha's family would provide poignant victim impact statements. Her mother, Marcy, went first.
Words cannot express the anguish our family and friends have endured since you kidnapped and brutally murdered Samantha. From the day I found out I was having Sammy, I was in love with her. As a mother, you worry and pray that your child will be safe, happy, and healthy. When she was sad, I was sad. When she was happy, so was I. Her dreams were my dream, and her death was my death. I close my eyes, and I feel what she endured at his hands 120 times, over and over and over, fighting for her life locked in his car. I used to have dreams for her. Now all I have are nightmares 120 times. The final moments, her bare feet kicking and fighting for her life. I visualize the blood flowing from her body, her beautiful body, 120 times for what? The $35 a college student has in her bank account? The loss of Sammy is beyond words. There'll be no more birthday parties, backyard gatherings, holiday celebrations, or activities to share with her. I was planning my trip to Columbia in 2019 to watch my daughter graduate from college. Instead, I went to Columbia to gather her belongings. I cannot watch my daughter graduate from law school, get married, or have children, all of which were her dreams. Her laughter, hugs, guidance, advice, and opportunities to tell her I love her are gone. Our family of four is forever broken. All I have are memories of the past and thoughts about what her final moments on earth must have been like. He erased my future with Sammy, but he cannot touch my memories.
Her father, Seymour, would also provide a statement to the court.
Thank you, Judge, for the opportunity to stand here and share with you the impact of losing my baby daughter, Samantha Josephson. I really don't know where to start or what to say. Do I stand here today and tell you that I've been an incredible amount of anger, an incredible amount of guilt, can't sleep at night? I don't want to go to sleep because all I do is start thinking of Samantha. I still, too, to this day, can't watch videos of Samantha. I hate looking at pictures. I have repeated nightmares and visions of him, the monster, stabbing her. I have visions of her foot on the back window. I have visions of her screaming and fighting. I have visions of her taking her last breath. I have such hatred running through me. I still, to this day, can't believe she is gone. I keep waiting for her to walk through the door, saying, "Hey," only the way she does.
Nathaniel's mother was also given the opportunity to provide a statement. The judge would actually stop her mid-sentence when she tried to suggest that her son was innocent.
Thank you, Your Honor. The state have accused our son of a crime that he didn't commit.
You know, ma'am, I'm not going to hear any claim of innocence.
Okay.
He's been convicted by the jury.
Okay. He is a very caring young man. This is a young man who went through high school, college, played ball, acted in his church, never had anything against him. Now, I know as a mother, and a mother knows her child, I know my son didn't do this. I know.
How do you know that?
By the way I raised him.
Pardon?
By the way I raised him. And when you are a mother, and you are a truly good mother, and you raise your child in the right way, you would know when that child has done something or did something right or wrong. I can't. And I know he didn't do this.
I'm not going to hear any claim of what he did or didn't do. Yes. He is guilty of murder. He's guilty of kidnapping. Yes, he's guilty of possession of a weapon during the commission of a violent crime. And if you had any testimony that you wanted to give for the jury to consider, the trial was the time to do that. I'm not listening to any claim of what he did not do. You are not a witness.
But he's a loving child. He's a good person. Very respect. And respect of.
Before Nathaniel was given his sentence, he was allowed to provide a statement. He addressed the judge and stated, "I know I'm innocent, but I guess what I know and what I think really doesn't matter." He complained that the state should have done more, and Judge Clifton Newman responded, "I have dealt with the heartless, and you fall into that category, without any remorse whatsoever. A person who is totally emotionless, and what the law would call a depraved heart." Nathaniel would be sentenced to life in prison. In South Carolina, a person convicted of murder is not eligible for parole, meaning that Nathaniel will spend the rest of his life behind bars. After handing down the sentence, Judge Newman stated, "She obviously put up an amazing fight against you and left a sufficient trail for the jury to see what you did."
I will never see her graduate from college, law school, walk her down the aisle, and get married to see the children, the grandchildren, all the milestones that one would normally experience if an animal or a monster did not take them away from us. And for what? What did you get from Sam? $10? $20?
Ride-sharing apps such as Uber and Lyft have become a lifesaver for most of us. But using such services can put us in a dangerous situation. Anybody can see a woman standing alone at night with her phone out and assume she is waiting on a car and use that to their sadistic advantage. The murder of Samantha Josephson was the epitome of a nightmare for women across the world and gave legitimacy to the fear that many of us have while trying to get home alone at night. Her murder, however, did spark change. Change to ensure that hopefully no other person will meet the same fate that Samantha did that night. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to say a big massive thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporters, B. Coop, Laura, Samantha, and Jessica. Support on Patreon really goes such a long way, and I am eternally grateful for your support. If you'd like to support the show, the link is in the show notes. In exchange for your support, you get exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, ad-free and early release episodes, bonus content, including videos, audio, and files, and I also send out merch. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, The Troubles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
The Troubles is the name generally attributed to the 30-year period of violence in Northern Ireland, which saw multiple sides and organisations waging war against each other. There were bombings, shootings, sniper attacks, human bombs, RPG attacks, and many stories of informers and spies. The Troubles podcast explains the events that occurred during that time, devoting one episode to each incident. It's a non-partisan, historical true crime podcast that explores the motivations and planning behind the attacks. The podcast is a great entry point for those who want to learn about such a volatile period in history. This season, we've already covered when members of the IRA went over to train FARC rebels on how to make mortars in Colombia, as well as the story of Captain Robert in Iraq, a British soldier who went undercover in an Irish pub, and after getting up on stage and singing rebel songs, he was discovered to be a soldier and taken away and violently murdered by the Republicans. Episodes are released every 2 weeks and are narrated by me. You can find the podcast by searching The Troubles Podcast on all major podcast platforms, including Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks, and see you there.